Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. On the show today, actually, first timer for The Speakeasy, a buddy of mine who, last time I saw him, was in Portland, Oregon at the Portland Cocktail Week, and he just so happened to be DJing, taking photographs, bartending, and cracking jokes all at the same time. It's pretty amazing. Welcome to the show, Mr. Ryan Fitzgerald.
Great to be here, Damon.
How you doing, brother?
Finally.
Yeah.
I'm good. Very good. I'm actually walking around a giant wood shop picking out a bar top for my new bar.
Awesome. Can you tell us anything about it yet, or is that still hush-hush?
Yeah, me and two partners opening a bar in San Francisco. Hopefully it will be open late March, early April. It's going to be called ABV, as in alcohol by volume. Mm-hmm. Lots of alcohol, lots of volume. And we're going to, yeah, it'll be a little bit of food. Contrary to what might seem logical for a bar that I'm opening, it's not going to be necessarily Mexican forward or mezcal influenced or tequila influenced, but just a good, affordable neighborhood bar with good music, good atmosphere, good service, good drinks, everything from Miller High Life to, House Made Tomorrow.
Awesome. That's such it's such a great thing to hear that because, I've had recently, like Rob Kruger from Extra Fancy on, and we're talking about the bar, and also last week I had Scranton Tui from Whistlers in Austin. We're talking about having an awesome bar that is fun. You can have cheap canned beer, or you can have badass rare spirits and awesome cocktails, and not no door policy, basically.
Exactly. I really think that it's a natural evolution that's been happening over the past couple of years of bars just saying, there's really no reason why we can't just have a really comfortable bar that's super accessible to everyone with absolutely fantastic cocktails and super unique and weird wines that everyone knows about. But you know what? If just someone that has never had, chartreuse before comes in and just wants a Miller High Life and a good shot of bourbon, then we've got that for you. And it just makes sense. We're there for the people. That's the deal. We're taking care of everyone.
Yeah, it's about time. I mean, like you said, it's been happening over the last couple of years. It's actually it's interesting because I've been dabbling with the idea of opening a bar over the last 5-6 years, or probably just as long as I've been bartending, really. But it was until, about the last year and a half, 2 years ago, I really couldn't pinpoint what it was. And it was something along those lines, where it was something more casual and it wasn't so stuffy, I don't wear a tie behind the bar every night. I did at some point, but I don't prefer it. So it's, I think it's a great, the direction that we're going in with these kinds of bars. I think it's time, and it's definitely definitely places for industry people and the like to hang out together. I've always said that, calling a cocktail bar is just as redundant as calling a restaurant a food restaurant. It's like a bar. You should be able to get cocktails at a bar. You shouldn't have to throw cocktail in front of bar to make it, to differentiate it. So what's cool about this is everyone's not everyone, but a lot of people like yourself and like Rob Kruger and these guys have started opening just great bars, classic bar with food. I get to call it a food restaurant or a cocktail bar. It's a bar and restaurant,
right?
And you get the highest quality. Everything should be quality anywhere you go,
right?
Even
right.
if it's like cheap tacos, they should be made the right way.
Right. It's definitely a great trend. I'm really definitely proud to be a part of it, and it just makes sense. So,
yeah.
Looking forward to opening a bar that people, and I think that that's going to be a great thing that when guests come through the door, they're going to sort of you know, they're gonna really embrace it and really understand it and be thankful that it's happening, just because of the trend has for so long been contrary to that. And you know, the funny thing that we're dealing with, that's really an interesting thing that I think, you know, is something that a lot of people don't actually talk about, is, you know, we've got some people that want to write about our bar, and they ask us these questions, and we're like, look, it's a bar, it's a good bar. There's no theme. It's not, you know, it's not from the 20s. It's not from, you know, Hawaii. It's not a tiki. It's not Mexico. It's just a bar. And they're like, they're so frustrated by that.
That's awesome. It's great, so, though. I mean, like, at the same time, it's
right.
It's funny that it's gotten so far away from just great bar to where you can't use any, like, buzzwords or, you know, any hashtags to, like, really describe it. It's just, like, quality
right,
and fun.
Exactly. We've got no gimmicks. It's a no-gimmick bar. It's going to be just, everything's going to be good. And well, I mean, that's our goal, and I hope that that's the case. I hope that's what our guests say about it, so.
Yeah. Well, contrary to it not being, you know, like, people who know that, actually, in fact, I was just walking through I was grabbing a cider before I came to the studio here at Roberta's, and my buddy Brad, who's a bartender here, was asking me who was on the show today. I was like, oh, yeah, my buddy Ryan Fitzgerald from San Francisco, and two dudes were like, hey, I know that dude. It's like, where is he? Like, oh, he's not actually here. We're doing a phone show. But it was kind of funny. Cause, so going with that, I was going to say that, like, people who know that you're really into your agave-based spirits. And you've been traveling to Mexico quite a bit recently as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I try to get down there at least 3 times a year. And it's, the past few years have been more of 5 or so times. It started with falling in love with tequila and being sent down there on trips for a restaurant that I worked at in San Francisco called Tres Agaves, and really opened my eyes to what those spirits were, and, you know, kept going down for more distillery visits and more, and then eventually fell in love with Mezcal and Oaxaca and going down there. And now I've got, you know, I've got my other job, which is being, you know, working for Del Maguey and spreading a lot of education and love regarding Del Maguey Mezcal, and also being on the board of the Tequila Interchange Project, which is a whole other multi-level thing of trying to help the industry not destroy itself.
Right. Phil Ward's been on a couple of times now, and he's definitely spoken a lot about the TIP. And it's a great organization, man. It must be, like, fun and fulfilling to be a part of that.
It's you know, it's fun and fulfilling and frustrating, all of those things. you know, it's you know, it's one of those. It's hard to really imagine how much. I mean, we're fighting a real tough thing, and it's not exactly a fight. It's more of a trying to work with. But there's really large companies who have, you know, goals to make a lot of money, and their goals don't include protecting the beautiful heritage of Mexico. And as much as we can suggest that and spend all of our time and money telling them that those things are important to conserve, you know, the almighty dollar is really what's at the bottom line for a lot of them. So we've got to spend some money to get them to think about how they can, you know, make a little less money, and also keep these cultures and this heritage alive for hopefully a foreseeable future.
I mean, it should be on both sides. I feel like it should have a lot to do with longevity. You know, like, first of all, you should harvest the right way. You should harvest agave in the correct way to keep it going for as long as you possibly can, right? But then also, for the companies who are trying to make a lot of money off of it, if you destroy the way that this spirit is made, then you're not going to be making any money down the line. And, you know, it's like, for both people, it's in the best interest to keep it going for as long as you can. But, you know, people get greedy, right, and they don't understand exactly
right
what that means.
It's kind of weird for us to be in the situation where we are, where we're seeing these companies that are really very successful, big companies that are so short-sighted. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're not seeing that they aren't short-sighted, but I mean, we from our perspective, they seem to be somewhat short-sighted. And the other thing that I've been talking a lot about lately and sort of trying to wrap my head around and sort of trying to explain to people too is that it's really impossible to translate the economy of a typical bar and a typical spirit to the world of agave spirits. It's too many people, I mean, and I'm seeing this now from a supplier side, selling a product, not selling, but, you know, talking about a product like Del Maguey that's very expensive. So many bar owners out there that are, you know, on this trend of mezcal. They want to sell mezcal, they want to sell tequila, and they want to sell the good stuff. They're doing the same thing they do with their gin, you know, the people that sell them gin, the same people that sell them vodka and whiskey and stuff like that. You know, it's the all these secret deals of, well, you know, how can I, you know, I'm selling 20, you know, 10 cases a week of your product. Can you get me a free case for every three cases? And it's like, people have to understand you can't really translate the typical economics of those super inexpensive spirits to the world of agave spirits where, you know, these plants can take 6 to 10 years to grow. And all the other things that go into it, just don't, you know, you can get a great gin for $12 a liter. You can't get it. You'll never, ever in the world get a great mezcal or a great tequila for $12, a $7.50 even, you know?
Right.
It just will never happen. And if you want to keep drinking quality and selling quality when it comes to the agave, you know, spirits industry, then you're going to have to pay money for it. And that's just something that people are going to have, that's a tough pill that a lot of people are going to have to swallow at some point. Which, you know, to me, I think into the Tequila Interchange Project, it's something we've looked at and said, you know, that's kind of been the downfall of tequila, is so many people pressuring the producers for a cheaper bottle price that, well, okay, fine, well, you guys asked for a cheaper bottle price, we'll give you a cheaper bottle price, but it's going to taste like crap.
Right.
And it's just one of these things that we're hoping to try to stop that, try to educate about people about what begging for a cheaper bottle on the regular, what that does to the whole economy of the whole spirits industry itself, and the kind of people that keeps in business and the kind of people that puts out of business are really things that, you know, the consumer and a lot of bar owners don't actually understand. So that's kind of the goal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it's backwards from when you think about, like, a whiskey or any, you know, a rum or a brandy, that something that's aged in a barrel, you're like, oh, okay, well, it's the time taken to get this to the point of maturation after it's distilled, you know, and
right.
It's completely backwards with agave spirits. It's all before you even distill it. You know, you've got years and years, just close to the same amount of years, typically, to grow the agave plant as you would to age like a bourbon. But people don't translate that, because then even then, you know, with like agave, say, you know, with like with tequila specifically, with your reposados and añejos, they see that as the age. It's like, oh, you only
right.
aged it a year. This bourbon was aged for 12 years, you know, like, why is this? It's just kind of backwards,
yeah.
But people don't, I don't know, they don't recognize that or accept it, I guess. Or maybe there's just not enough education about it, and I guess that's really...
Yeah, I think it's a lot about education about it, and I think it's a lot about just this, you know, it's just such a, it's not a trend, but it's this custom in the booze industry, and these people that are getting involved in people that own bars, you know, it just happens all the time, and you're actually kind of considered a fool. Honestly, you're a fool if you own a bar and you don't really work your salespeople hard and try to get the cheapest price you can, especially on things you're selling a ton of. I mean, it makes sense, and you can do it, and you can drive a hard bargain, and it's a smart thing to do, but it's really going to take a lot of education and a lot of people actually saying no. Especially when it comes to mezcal in the future, what could be the potential future for mezcal at this point is to say, look, you know, you just can't get a quality mezcal for less than this price. It's just impossible. And if anyone says they're doing it, then they're lying to you. It's just kind of that simple. And
right.
That's the kind of the education that has to happen. And I think more people have to sort of hear that, experience that, see that, and try to taste some of these new things that'll come out that are at a really low price and understand that truly, yeah, that's not helping anyone. That's not helping the future of the spirit. It's not helping the future of the people. And those are things that, you know, at the core of what the future really is.
Well, and also I think to add on to that, I think, you know, when as like a bar manager, when you're ordering spirits for the bar and, you know, you are banging out, you know, cases and cases of a certain spirit. Yeah, I mean, there should be There usually is. I mean, I'm not saying there should be. It's like the whole idea of like buybacks. It's like every third drink you get a free one. That's not an actual rule that was ever written anywhere. I don't know. It's some urban myth, you know. And like I don't honor that at my bar, but also I'm not like slinging, you know, $4 well drinks. We're taking time and crafting something. It's like it's the same thing as the spirit too. I think as long as you're a proper like gentleman or lady, like in the management part of and ordering part of the bar, it's like you have to first of all select your spirits wisely. You have to choose spirits of certain quality, right? And you have to make it work for your bar. You can't have everything for everyone, but you have to have something for everyone. And I really strongly believe that. But especially if you're choosing quality spirits, in this particular instance we're talking about agave-based spirits, you should it's on the part of the manager too, and it's not just like a one-sided thing where it's you should be able to understand how to order and order wisely to where your costs are set the right way, you know. I don't think it's strictly based on, you know, I completely understand agave being like Del Maguey Mezcal. You know, they're not the cheapest, but they are the best, you know. So I stock them at my bar, but I don't raise a fuss about it because I really believe in the brand. And it's not just that brand, it's other brands too. And, you know, every once in a while, just being a true gentleman about it, somebody might kick back something to me. But I also base my like cocktail menus and the way I price everything on how it should be priced. And I try to do as fairly as possible. And I think that's something that not a lot of people get, you know?
I think that goes back to sort of what we were talking about with regards to what my bar will be and what I think a lot of the trend is and what sort of got lost in all this world of, like, when you call it a cocktail bar, people start to think of, oh, well, that's just a bar where you can get good cocktails. Guess what? People can make, you know, quote unquote, good, tasty cocktails out of the worst spirits on the planet. It can happen. If you're good at your job, you can do that. What I'm talking about with these kind of bars go beyond not only that cocktail and that experience, but the experience that we as bar owners are giving to people is just that. It's an experience. And what I think is, you know, just like, I don't have all the time in the world to learn all about all the woods that I was just talking about that's going to go on my bar top. I don't have the time to figure out how it works going together, how it melds together. I'm hiring a professional. I go see a professional to build my bar for me. That's great. Now people come into my bar to help me give them a great experience and teach them about, well, not everyone wants to learn, but for them to have an experience that they wouldn't get at the normal bar, you know?
Right.
Have them get an experience where they would, you know, they come to my bar because they know that I've curated the spirits behind the back bar. I've done all of my due diligence to educate myself about what goes into them. I'm not going to pour them some garbage that I wouldn't drink. And I think that's why, you know, I mean, that's what people are hoping for in this day and age. There's a lot of search for not only authenticity, but that sort of experience of, you know, what you know, I hope I can go to, if I go to a car salesman and he knows all the details about every inch of that car, then I'm more likely to buy it from him than someone who doesn't know what's going on with my car. So it's like, come to my bar. I know everything about all the spirits behind me, and that's so that I can help you make a wiser choice as to what you want to drink.
Yeah. And I think, go back to what you were saying about, you know, it is possible to, you know, make a really tasty cocktail out of, you know, cheaper ingredients. And, you know,
right.
And like, and if, shit, man, if Gary Regan can have a line out the door for him to stick his finger in your Negroni and stir it and people just like go crazy for it, then I think there's hope for, you know, putting together a nice cocktail with cheaper ingredients.
Right.
Let's take it.
Right.
Hey, Ryan, do you have I think we're about 8 minutes away from the end, but let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and chat a little bit more. Okay.
Sounds great.
All right. See you in a second.
Bye.
You are listening to Cheaters by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from the Speakeasy.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. We support Heritage Radio Network because all you folks listening are so genuine, so dedicated to serious food, so much a part of what this country needs to strive to become. People like you are few and far between, and it's obvious to us at Fairway that we've got to stick together. Our desire is that the word gets out about Heritage Radio Network in its support for serious food, foodstuffs that offer memorability and timelessness, authenticity and rarefied quality. This country grew too fast to have established any degree of a heritage. Europe had centuries to develop one. America has not. Heritage Radio Network serves to hasten the evolution of a society that often appears coarse and uninterested. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
And we're back. We've got Ryan Fitzgerald on the phone in San Francisco. And we were just talking about, I think we just ended with Gary Regan stirring drinks with his finger. But we before that, we were talking about your bar and like the kind of like modern idea of what a great bar is and what it can be. And it's, I love it, man. I love it. I love going into, you know, places like, you know, Mission Chinese. I love going there. And it's like awesome Chinese food, but it's, there's no pretension, you know. It might be a little hip, but it's like, also it's like, it's just really great food, but it's not like expensive. And there's like, it's not like fancy, you know, it's like, but you know, it's not just restaurants anymore. Now it's bars. We're starting to get into the point where we're seeing bars that have like no door policy or pretension, and you can just go have fun and have great drinks and great food and great times, and not have to feel like you're undereducated or like not in this secret club. You know, it feels that way a lot of times with cocktail bars.
Yeah, always. You know, and I agree 100% that it's a nice. That's the trend. I guess with the idea that, I mean, I worked at a place that had a door policy before, and I get it, and I'm actually, you know, a lot of people that didn't, a lot of my friends, you know, what I like to call my non-alcoholic friends, people that aren't in the industry, used to always say, oh, you know, that place is so pretentious, I don't know why you want to go there, or, you know, and of course I could get in because I knew the folks there or whatever, and so it seemed even more pretentious that you had to be in the know in order to get in, but it comes to the, you know, there's a lot of talk nowadays of people trying to figure out how do you do these sort of, you know, how do you, you know, run a bar that has really high quality cocktails that can, you know, be accessible to everyone and do all these things. And of course, a lot of people are doing, you know, they're batching cocktails and then I've had some great ones and I've had some not so great ones. And I've, you know, it's still an argument that the jury's still out as far as I'm concerned on the whole batching cocktails. I don't think we're going to be doing it at our place, but you know, it's great. The evolution involves a lot more new discussions of all kinds of other new types of, you know, things that some people feel one way about and some people feel another way about. So it's, but you know, I never really thought, you know, I understood the idea of a door policy and how that seemed pretentious, but at the same time was a really, you know, it was always meant to provide people with a great experience.
Sure.
Which again,
absolutely. And, you know, I mean, to me, though, there's a difference. Like, if you're doing cocktails with, like, 12 ingredients, of course, and you're doing them all, like, a la minute, then you kind of have to have a door policy. You can't have people floating around. Like, you can't be three deep, work, you know, making tiki drinks for, you know, 100 people at a time. And
right.
But, I mean, I think there's a certain balance. I don't think that the quality of drink really means, like, super rare ingredients or the more ingredients. I mean, some of my highest-selling cocktails actually had the lowest cost and, like, four ingredients.
Right.
But they were just they were, like, viral cocktails, you know? And I was always like, oh, man, I feel really good about this one that has, like, this one's like a modern classic with, like, Armagnac and Benedictine and, like, an absinthe rinse and all this stuff. It's like, you know, like, it could have been in a book 150 years ago due to all the ingredients that are in it. But it's like, you know, no one's ever done this before. It's like, oh, but you're ordering that, like, that aged rum daiquiri with a rinse of Broncamenta in it, you know, that you know, cost me, like, nothing. And that's great. Yeah. I mean, like, it's kind of going back to what we were saying about, you know, being a smart bar manager and, you know, making the money you need to make, but also offering, you know, things at the right price and everything. But, I mean, I think that, especially, like, it's dependent on the volume for a place, too. that's where the door policy comes in, I suppose. But also, I don't know, there are certain aspects to it. Like, if you are, like, in a cocktail bar, like a kind of, like, den, and, you know, a lot of those places, like, you'll, like, be on a date or, like, in a meeting or something, and you don't want, like, two or three people behind you, like, screaming, reaching right. around you, paying for a drink, and, like, spilling stuff on you, and, like, yeah, so I get the door policy. I'm in no way knocking that, but I think it's, like, right. I think we're definitely moving away from that for the most part, I feel like, you know?
Right, yeah, well, it was something that came along with the whole cocktail bar mentality in the mixology world, and it just sort of helped lend itself to this, you know, well, we need to control the door. All right, well, let's see it. What's that going to turn us into? Well, it's going to turn us into a place that, well, it's not going to be as rowdy. It's not going to be as loud. And then how do we take that lack of rowdiness, that lack of volume, and use it to our advantage and sort of say, okay, the experience we're actually curating for you is a completely different experience than the normal bar experience. And the only time that ever ran into trouble was when people tried to come into a bar with a door policy and that experience of, like, comfort and, you know, lots of, you know, a reasonable amount of room to spread out and a quiet conversation, and people came into that, you know, place that offered that experience expecting the typical experience of any other, you know, dive bar or sports bar that they've been to in the past. And that was the only times that people that would come into those would be a little bit upset and confused as to what was going on. But, you know, it's just like restaurants. You know, there's a restaurant for every experience you want these days. You know, if you want to go to the white tablecloth in the Michelin star restaurants, or, you know, you want to go to Mission Chinese, or you want to go to a taqueria, there's experience for, you know, whatever you're doing. And that, I mean, I think it just makes sense that the bars are, you know, evolving to sort of match that these days.
Speaking of, what was that taqueria we went to that one day when I was in San Francisco? We bartended together.
Man, I'm trying to think of, there's a couple of different ones it could have been Cancun. That's probably my favorite burrito in the Mission, the vegetarian burrito, but there's a taqueria with tacos, La Taqueria, that's pretty super indulgent gringo style tacos.
I think that might have been it.
Yeah, it might have been it. The Mexican food that we have, we're so lucky. And I'm about to have some right now down in Watsonville near where we're purchasing our board, but we're so lucky to have it. I hear have you been to the Mission Chinese, the Mission Burrito joint?
The Mission Cantina?
Danny Bowens?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. I've been there a few times. Yeah. I went with my brother a couple times. It's awesome. It's awesome. Actually, dude, my brother just moved out to San Francisco a couple months ago, so you'll have to look him up while you're out there, or while he's out there.
Definitely. This is your brother that was in the band Brothers?
Yeah, and Billy, the lead singer of the band, is out there too. They're working for Wired right now, so they're out there for a little while redoing the magazine. So they're both out there, so I don't know if I should be hooking you guys up together, because they're already pretty rowdy enough on their own. You guys are all rowdy, like, separately and individually. But I'll actually be coming out there in about a month or so to visit, so we'll have to definitely hang out when I'm out there.
Excellent. Yeah, hopefully wait till a month from now. We'll definitely bring you out to the bar and show you what some of the things we're trying to do, and pick your brain for anything that we might be able to change at that point that you might have a good input on, because that's the other thing that's been great about this whole bar experience, is I've been having the opportunity to travel around here and there to different cities and be like, so what do you hate about your bar? What do you love about your bar? What do you hate? What do you love? I'm trying really hard to try to use all that knowledge, because all these bartender friends of ours we know we all have something we love about a bar and what we hate about a bar, and
yep,
it's good information to digest, for sure.
I hate that mine closes every night.
that's great. That's too bad that has to happen. You could move to Miami.
No, thanks.
I don't think that would work.
No, I don't think I would do so well. I burn very easily. Well, Ryan, I guess that's it for the show today. But thanks so much for taking the time out of your day. I know you're a busy man. And can't wait to check out the bar when it's open. And can't wait to see you again, man.
Yeah, likewise, man. Thanks for having me. It was a blast and went by real fast. But, I look forward to seeing you out here, and we'll chat more.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Yeah,
that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check in next week, and we'll have some more fun talking about the things we love. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.